Here's your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Less than 6% of the nation's top companies are led by a woman. And while the number of female CEOs has doubled in the past decade, the figures aren't expected to improve much more anytime soon.
Men are predominantly in the roles that are these operational roles, these mission-critical roles that do lead to the CEO spot. Women, on the other hand, are overwhelmingly in roles that are considered as support roles. These are important roles, but they're like the chief marketing officer, the chief HR officer, the general counsel.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Vanessa Fermins. She'll explain what's keeping women out of those pivotal executive jobs that often act as stepping stones to the top, and what some companies are doing to change that. That's next. Women earn most of the college degrees in the U.S. and make up half the workforce, but relatively few hold top corporate jobs. So what's holding women back? Wall Street Journal reporter Vanessa Fermins is here with us to explain. So Vanessa, what are the current numbers in the S&P 500 with regard to female CEOs?
Well, they don't look that great. When you look at the entire S&P 500, you have, at the moment, 29 women leading companies. That's just about 5%.
And those numbers really haven't improved.
Well, if you just take a look at last year, you can see why it is taking so long. I mean, last year, well, actually, over the last 2 years, we had 6 women who were appointed to CEO positions in the S&P 500, which might look like some reasonable progress. But at the same time, we had 7 women step down or be ousted from their jobs. So really, we took a step back in that 2-year period.
But women do hold executive positions at these companies, right?
They do. And companies have made progress in elevating women to the C-suite and to the senior level positions. The issue is, many of those women, you could even argue most of those women, are not moving up into the positions that really matter, the ones with power.
And those are known as profit and loss, or P&L?
Right. They are essentially the roles that involve somebody running a business unit, a brand, a department, something like that. Anything that has responsibility for generating a profit and being responsible for all the parts of the business within that division.
And that was the topic of a Wall Street Journal analysis of the largest 3,000 companies in the U.S.
Yes, we really wanted to take a step back look at what is happening on the broader corporate landscape. So we collected the data on the country's 3,000 biggest publicly traded companies by market value, and that's essentially the Russell 3000 index. And we looked at the top executives at each of those companies and what roles they were in and what gender they were. And what you saw, and what you continue to see, is that men are predominantly in the roles that are these operational roles, these mission-critical roles that do lead to the CEO spot. Women, on the other hand, are overwhelmingly in roles that are considered as support roles. These are important roles, but they're like the chief marketing officer, the chief HR officer, the general counsel. They're all very important roles, but they aren't the stepping stones to the CEO job.
And some companies are making inroads. Hershey, for example, has done a lot to move women along the path to top executive roles.
In a word, you could say it's because of strategic talent planning. Under the previous CEO, a man, J.P. Bilbrey, the company really started much more systematically building a female pipeline to the C-suite. And their current CEO, Michelle Buck, who is the first woman to run that company, is you could say, a product of that effort. And she continues that tradition today. She and her executive team meet several times a year. They discuss the 70 or so top roles of the company, and they look at the men and women who make up those roles and the people right below them. And then they look at how they would map out those careers of those people. What is the experience those people need to broaden their experience to prepare them for the next role and be successes in those roles?
And then on another occasion, Chevron hired an outside consultant to help them find the next crop of executives. And they got some very interesting results.
Yes, they had been doing their own leadership assessments inside the company, if you will, for a long time. And then they hired a third party that took a slightly different, broader look at what's a leader. And as you can imagine, the metrics included things beyond being someone who's take charge or assertive or makes decisions from the gut. It included also consensus building, team leading, other metrics like that. And what they saw was the women at the top of their organization scored much higher than they had previously.
And this is the oil and gas field, which is a male-dominated field.
Right. So not too many women to begin with.
Also, something very significant I read is that women were not as likely to be encouraged to seek pivotal executive roles as men were.
Yes, this has come up in some of the research that has been done around this conundrum, the why. Why aren't women getting into these roles? And the Working Mother Research Institute earlier this year actually conducted a pretty comprehensive study surveying men and women across a number of different companies. And what they found was it was as simple as not getting that information. Men, because of their networks, because of perhaps the sponsors that they might more readily have, role models that they might more readily have available to them, were getting this information and were acting upon it, essentially. Whereas women, more often than not, were left in the dark as to sort of how to map out their career to the next move, certainly if they wanted to consider a leadership track.
Now, how about women who might hold the P&L jobs, who would be promoted to a position that's outside the path to the CEO position, but is still a very high-level position?
Yes. Well, some of the very senior women that I spoke to said they were very leery of making that kind of move once they did have that experience. I spoke to Ellen Coleman, who's the former CEO of DuPont. She now is the CEO of Carbon. It's a 3D printing startup. But she talked about her time at DuPont when she already had a big P&L role, and her boss at the time said, you know, it'd be really great for you to round out your resume and take on a support role, because this would demonstrate to the board how you can wield influence with other leaders at the company. And she was very reticent. She said, if your boards are forgetful, they'll forget that I had this big role. I'm not sure I want to make that move. And ultimately, she kept her P&L role and added additional responsibilities to it, and then continued on to bigger operational roles.
So she saw the potential challenges down the road.
She did. She saw that as a potential pitfall.
So this sounds like it's less of a glass ceiling at work and more the result of some barriers in place along the way.
Yes, I think the apt metaphor is really a glass or invisible wall. It's not so much that men and women are progressing in their careers equally, and then the women are suddenly hitting a glass ceiling at the very top. It's that men and women are building their careers and being encouraged to build their careers in many cases differently than men, often very early on.
Does corporate culture play a big role in setting a path for women?
It certainly does. You see, the Boston Consulting Group did a really insightful study a few years ago where they saw that at companies where there was a corporate culture that fostered diversity and that where employees felt like there were more women, more people of ethnic minorities at the top, the women's ambition levels were equally as high as the men's. But at companies where that wasn't the case, there was a much bigger differential.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Vanessa Fermins with us. Vanessa, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.